Okay, so I do feel like some like often the way the chabura comes about is, like from the hand of Hashem. So I last Shabbos I read two different articles by Rabbi Sacks. I really enjoyed both of them, and I figured one of them would be the chabura. And then I was in shul this week, and I don't know, I guess the Baal Tefillah went a little bit long for something, and there was only one sefer near me. So I picked it up, and it was really, really like an interesting sefer on the parsha. So I started reading through it, and I found like one piece that I really liked. I ended up reading it twice over the week, and then in the end, I decided that that was the chabura. So tonight, I'm going to share with you mainly the idea of Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria. I was not really, I mean, I knew the name, but I didn't really know who he was. Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria was, according to Google, the father of the Kippah Serugah movement. He was a big Rosh Yeshiva here in Israel. I think he also started or founded the Bnei Akiva Yeshiva in Kfar Roeh. So it was an interesting thought that he had. So I'll share that with you today, as well as a quick idea by the Nesiva Shalom, the Slonim Rebbe. So we are at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. So often when you learn Vayeshev, there's really, three stories that you, four stories maybe that you could choose from. You have the beginning with Yosef and the brothers, including the Mechira. Afterwards, you have Yehuda and Tamar. And then after that, you have Yosef and Eishes Potiphar. And if you get really, really far, you're at the end of the parsha, you have the butler and the baker. But we didn't get very far. We're starting from the second pasuk of the parsha. Ela toldot Yaakov Yosef. These are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef. It's a painful pasuk to read. Basically, what the pasuk is saying is that all the children of Yaakov were Yosef. So Yosef ben 17 shana, haya roe et echav batzon, v'unar b'nei Bilhah b'nei Zilpah she aviv. So he was 17 years old. He was a shepherd amongst his brother. He was a shepherd amongst his brothers in with the tzon. Probably a little bit hard. Haya roeh et echav batzon. It should really be roeh im echav batzon. And he was a nar with the Bnei Bilha and the Bnei Zilpah, who are the wives of his father. Interesting that it calls them the wives of his father, right? They're not wives. They're actually always referred to as, right, their concubines. So why is it all of a sudden that they're wives? So I don't remember where it was, the Ramban, but I'm not sure. It says that at this point, Leah had actually died already. The Seder Olam quotes that, which is a book of generations and the history of the Jewish people. So because Leah had died, and of course Rachel, we know, had died at this point in time, they were considered neshei, they were considered wives, not concubines. So their status had been uplifted. And Yosef brings back bad words to his father. So we discussed this last year, I believe. What does that mean, Dibatamra? Who's it talking about? So it was a pretty radical idea that perhaps Yosef was talking about the Bnei Bilha and the Bnei Zilpah. It's kind of like counterintuitive, because we always assume that it's going on the beginning of the pasuk. But the truth is, there is no mention of the Bnei Leah. Everything in the pasuk seemed to focus on the Bnei Bilha and Bnei Zilpah. But for the sake of tonight, we're going to ignore that idea and assume that the Lashon Hara he speaks is about his older brothers from Leah. And Yaakov loved Yosef from all of his sons because he was a ben zikunim. And he made for him a ktone pasim. So what is a ben zikunim? Rashi says that he was of his old age. He knew most of his, he taught him all of his Torah. And for whatever reason, he decides to make him a color coat. His brothers see this, that their father loves him more than all the other brothers. They hate him, and they can't speak peacefully to him. So Yosef dreams a dream, tells his brothers, and they hate him even more. So it seems like they hated him for the coat, and now they hate him for the dream. He says, listen to the dream I had. We were bundling bundles in the field. And my bundle got up and I was standing. Nitzava, like straight. And behold, all of your bundles surrounded my bundles and my bundle and bowed down to my bundle. The brothers say to him, "Really? Is that your plan? You're gonna rule over us?" And they hated him even more about his dreams and about what he had said. Any questions so far? Okay, I'm gonna assume that means that we're good. So he dreams another dream and tells his brothers. I had another dream. So he says the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. He tells his father and his brothers. His father gets angry. You really think that your mother and I are going to, and your brothers are going to bow down to you? So Rashi points out, he throws in ani v'imcha, your mother, to say your mother is dead, and therefore this dream is stupid, it's not real. And really he's saying this in order to quiet the brothers. He doesn't want the brothers to be jealous of him, so he says this in order to silence them. And his brothers are jealous. They no longer hate him. Now they're jealous. Interesting. V'aviv shamar et hadavar. And his father listened to this thing. Shamar, either listened, to listen, to pay attention. He guarded, or the idea of he anticipated. Right? We're supposed to be shown. Rabbi Kron, it's a great vart. Rabbi Kron says that we're supposed to be Shomer Shabbat. What does it mean to be Shomer Shabbos? We usually think of it as someone who is, we keep Shabbos, right? There's a bunch of laws. We don't do any of the things that we can't do. We do all the things we're supposed to do. He goes, but really, the idea of Shomer Shabbos is a person that anticipates Shabbos, right? It's Monday. Oh, I can't wait till Shabbos. It's Tuesday. I can't wait till Shabbos, etc., etc. That's Shamar Tadavar. And therefore, what is his father doing? His father actually believes that the dreams are going to come true. So what does he do? He waits, and he waits, and he waits. Okay? Those are our psukim pretty quickly. Again, any questions?
Yeah, so in Dalet, they hate him, and as you, in the end, they're jealous of him. Which is worse?
So usually it starts off as jealousy and then you hate them, right? Like, think about this, what happens, right? Your colleague, your neighbor has something that you really want. So initially you're jealous of them. You wish you had it. As time goes on, it changes from you're jealous to you hate them. You can't talk to them anymore. That's generally how it works. And yet here it's the opposite, which doesn't really make so much sense. And we had discussed Rabbi Shalom years ago. He says that it started off as hatred because they didn't think it was really going to happen. So they just hated him for having these dreams. Once he had the second dream and they saw that it wasn't a dream, it was nevuah, they couldn't hate him anymore. But they were jealous of him because they wished that it was them. Any other questions?
Ani v'imcha.
Say again.
Mother.
Oh,
ani v'imcha v'achecha.
Right.
Where's his mother?
Right. So that's Rashi points out that that there is no mother, and that's Yaakov's way of discrediting the whole thing. So there's two answers to that. First off, even if a dream has nevuah, there's usually some element in dreams of stuff that's, silly. So that's one. But the other possibility is that his surrogate mom, unfortunately Rachel died when he was young, his surrogate mom was Bilha. So he'll say the dream happened. Of course, there is an opinion that Bilha and Zilpah died before they came down to before they came down to Mitzrayim. So how are you going to deal with that? But the truth is, Yaakov never bows down to him anyway. It's only the brothers. So the dream right. didn't fully, the second dream didn't fully happen.
Was Dina excluded?
Was Dina excluded? Yeah. It seems that it's just the brothers, not Dina. I guess it's possible that Dina had also died before they got down. I don't know. I shared, I think, last week the Ramban that says that Dina is buried up near Tzfat. But we would have to look and see if there is also a timeline as to when she passed away. Okay, let's take a look at the... Yeah, sorry.
Pasuk Gimel. Mm-hmm. I think that's really out of place, meaning it should be before this... Before we start talking about the, Yosef and the brothers being Ra'itzon, that probably would have made more sense as a precursor to the entire story.
So you would write it Eila Tolud Yaakov Yosef Ben Shvasrei Shana. Period. Right? Yaakov Yosef is 17. Yisrael loved Yosef more than all the sons because he was Ben Skunim, had a Ketonet Pasim. And then afterwards, he was a shepherd with the sheep, and he hung out with the Bnei Bilhah, the Bnei Zilpah. That's how you would want to read it.
Yeah.
I hear that. So I guess there's two possibilities. One possibility is that chronologically, he didn't get the coat until after Vayaveh Yosef Adi Batamra Levihem, which would open up a huge can of worms and a big question. I think the Nesiva Shalom is going to deal with some of that. So that would be one possibility. But the other possibility is we first want to get like a bigger picture. We have this kid Yosef. We do know of him, but not much. We don't know what he's up to. He's 17. We have no idea what the brothers are up to either. So it's telling us that they took over their father's enterprise of shepherding the sheep. Even though actually it's not really clear that from this part that all the brothers were shepherding, but let's assume that is the case. And that Yosef said some Lashon Hara about his brother, about his brothers, and then he got the coat. So I guess if you read it, if it's chronologically, then it has to be that way. If it's the second way, yeah, you could read it that way. The Nesiva Shalom maybe. It could be that the Nesiva Shalom answers your question, Steve, a little bit. Not sure. You could decide at the end if you feel that way. But it's a good point.
It's also interesting that it doesn't start off with a vav.
Oh, meaning it's not ve'ela toldo, like
right.
Parsha toldo.
Not only that, every single pasuk here in this section starts with a vav.
Yeah, I feel like there is, there is Torah on that. If I had to guess, it would be something like the thing that's missing between the brothers, so it's like highlighted over and over and over again, is the fact that there's a vav between them, that they're connected. I mean, probably, Mati, the simplest answer is there's a lot of verbs in these psukim, and because there's a lot of verbs, you're going to have a vav at the beginning of the pasuk. If I had to guess statistically, probably the number of psukim that start with a vav in Tanakh are probably overwhelmingly large, because that's you can't have a and he or an and they without that vav ha'ipuch. But yeah, sure. It's definitely it sounds familiar enough that there's a good vart there.
I think I once read or heard that there are a lot of the vavs because it's one continuous story. Everything that's going on is not separate things. It's especially with Yehuda Tamar, so I'm coming in the middle. It's one long story.
Right, which is it's a good point, but that I think that highlights the question why it's not ve'elet toldo, because the story right before Rashi even connects and says that after seeing how big the Bnei Esav were, Yaakov was overwhelmed, and then God says, "Don't worry about it. You have Yosef. The Bnei Esav are like straw, and Yosef is a match that's going to light it on fire." I have to say, just like on a completely separate note, that 3 weeks ago, Rav Bagno, the Rav here in our shul, gave the most amazing 25-minute drasha. It was really more like a shir than a drasha about Esav and Kash and how that all works. And he went through all the times that Esav is midrashically referred to as Kash. And I just could not remember enough of it, but that was really what I wanted to do tonight. So I guess one day, if I could remember all the pieces, we'll go with it. Okay, so yeah, these are all good. They're all good points, good problems. The Nesiva Shalom lays out all of our questions, I think, beautifully. So let's take a look. That's the side photocopy. Steve, that's your pasuk. Pasuk Gimel. Uverashi maybe a targum unklus al ben zekunim bar chakim hulei. So Rashi says, quotes the targum unklus, who says, what's a ben zekunim? A bar chakim. It is someone who's really smart. The kamash alamad mishem ve'aver masar lo. He taught him all the Torah that he learned from Shem and Aver. V'lechora tzarech biur eich asah zot Yaakov. So he says, we really have to think, what was Yaakov thinking? Hare kefisha olam in a psukim kolin yamechir Yosef neshtal shel mizesh abed Yosef v'kol banav. It sounds like everything that goes wrong has to do with this pasuk. Steve, maybe that's the answer to your question. It connects the pasuk dalet and onward, which is mechiras Yosef. It all stems from this pasuk. Everything that comes afterwards comes from this point. How could it be that Yaakov did something that you can't do? Is the Torah's point to write the bad parts of the Jewish people? Okay, so that's question number one. Why is Yaakov giving him the coat? What's it supposed to tell us? Two, Kein tzarech biur mashenemer lalan v'yachalom Yosef chalom v'yedecha v'yusif otznoto. Okay, Yosef tells his dreams and he keeps telling them. V'achar kach v'yachalom od chalom acher, and afterwards he tells another dream. Yoter min rishon v'yisaper al aviv v'lachav. So and then he tells his father and his brothers. Why does he decide that he has to hate his? He has to create hatred, even more hatred amongst his brothers. I know that last year, I think I shared the idea that someone wrote a sefer or a book, whatever you want to call it, about how Yosef was on the spectrum, and I discussed that. I thought it in my head. But there is someone who wrote a book on it. He used to live in West Hempstead, moved to the Five Towns. It's an interesting theory. Have not read the book, although Ariella texted me earlier this year saying, hey, do we have that book? Because I would love to read it. And I was like, I would also love to read it, but I'm not buying it. So if you can find someone with it, that's fine. We're not buying the book. But the idea is that he wants to suggest is that Yosef doesn't have the social cues to read the room. And therefore, he must be on the spectrum. So it bothers me that could be out there. David, clearly, it looks like from your facial gestures that you don't buy it. I don't buy it either, because I don't...
Well, you know what? I can buy it that Yosef has behavioral issues, because look how his father treats him when he's got 11 other sons. So...
Oh, so you do. You are willing to buy it. Okay, so I read your face wrong.
I'll tell you that I disagree, because he does too well socially in Mitzrayim.
Right. So I think this guy, again, I haven't read the book. I've only read articles that the guy has written. And he's a really good guy. Don't get me wrong. I actually really like him personally, the author. But I think the thinking is that there are people on the spectrum that are wildly successful. The fact that he's a numbers person, it could be he's autistic a little bit and he has like this unbelievable ability. I bring it up not because I actually believe
I don't
in
buy it either.
I bring it up not because I believe in the theory. What I do think is that the question always that jumps out is that Yosef really doesn't read the room well. So what's going on? So I think one answer is he's 17 years old. A lot of 17-year-olds don't read the room well. They say stupid things that get their brothers upset. But even that, for the Torah to be telling us that Yosef is immature, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's fine. And we certainly have spent a lot of time over the years, you know, creating the dealing with the reality, which is certainly not something that everybody is comfortable doing. you know, they're just, they are normal people. They're big tzaddikim, don't get us wrong, who mess up really much worse than we probably do in our interpersonal with our family. But nonetheless, they are great tzaddikim. So it's nice to see that perhaps there's a different answer than just that Yosef is trying to get his brothers upset. We'll share two different answers to question number two, one from the Nesiva Shalom and one from Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria. And I think both of them give a different you know, take on things. And to me, what I like the most about them is it kind of moves us away from the thought that Yosef was just an immature 17-year-old, or that Yosef lacked the ability to see what his brothers felt. And then the last one is Otzarach Bi Ramadikat Vayelchu El Chav Lirot Et Son Avim Shchem. We didn't quote this pasuk, but it says that the brothers went Lirot Et Son Avim Shchem. I never realized this, at least I don't think, until tonight. But it's there. It's Lirot Et Son Avim, and Yosef was Ro'eh Et Echav Batzon. Really, both of them should have been just Ro'eh Hatzon. He was the shepherd of the sheep. And by them, it should say Lirot Hatzon Bishchem. That et is extra by both of them. So Rashi famously says that the Amru Chazal, Nakud al et, Lomar Shalom Halchu al Lirot Hatzman. Rashi quoted here by the Nesiva Shalom from the Bereishis Rabba says that they went to take care of themselves. Famous comment. Ugamkin Kashel Lomol Shiftei Ka HaKadosh. It's hard for us to understand that. The Chibah Torah Lesaver Gnutam Shalchu al Lirot Hatzman. Is the Torah really trying to tell us, you know, that they, you know, is it trying to bring down their negative character traits as well, that they went to take care of themselves? The truth is, I think that you have a much bigger question on the brothers. This question doesn't bother me as much, because if it had not said vayiruach echav et hatzon, I would have a bigger problem. What about the fact that it tells us all about Mechiras Yosef? Isn't that bignutan? Isn't that ultimately the greatest sad, tragic part of the brothers? But apparently, Nesiva Shalom wants to know, why is it that it stresses that they were taking care of themselves?
What is with the word et? I mean, you brought it up earlier. It's like the word's being thrown around in this whole segment.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure if you wanted to like come up with like a cute vart of Aleph to Tav, everything is from Hashem or something like that, you could.
I'm not that good at that stuff.
Yeah, but I don't think that would be almost, that's even worse than throwing out the gematria as 401 and then finding a corresponding word to it. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't have an answer. I mean, I think it's interesting that Rashi picks up on this one, but I don't think that there's a famous answer on Roe et Echav Batzon, which also seems to be problematic. So he ends off by saying, Maya chaser lem beveit avim shehutzuchu leilech l'shchem lirot et etzman. What was missing? Their father was a rich man. He had everything. Why did they have to go to Shechem to take care of themselves? Those are the three questions. Basically, the Nesiva Shalom's question is, why does Yaakov look so bad? Why does Yosef look so bad? Why do the brothers look so bad? Rav Neria actually, I think, writes it even more, puts it even clearer, where he says, why would the Torah purposely go out of its way to paint the Shiftei Ka and the entire family of Yaakov in a negative light when they are such unbelievable people? So that's the question. Okay. So I'll share with you the Nesiva Shalom's answer first. He says like this. Yosef has no... Yosef had the koach of holding back his desires. He quotes from the pasuk that says Vayitapak by Yosef. Yosef holds back his crying. Vayomer simu lachem. He says, put in front of them bread. So he says, that idea is that when you hold back, you get all that you want. In Judaism, we believe that if you withhold your desires from yourself, God takes care of you. Vayitapak, you hold back. God says, simu lachem, I will give you what you need. Yosef is the one that actually truly has that character trait. And we definitely see it by Yosef being able to hold back his desires and his urges, probably most clearly by Eshes Potiphar. And somehow when he does, because he does that, God takes care of him. So Yaakov appreciated this midah, says the Nesiva Shalom. He appreciated the fact that Yosef was a person that didn't want everything. He was able to hold back his desires. And Yaakov wanted all the brothers to emulate that. So he was chosen as the leader. That was what he was supposed to do. And his dreams, from the one that's the land and then the one that's the sky, says in Siva Shalom, is basically saying that he has the ability to hold himself back, both in Gashmias and physicality, and Ruchnias and spirituality. And what Yosef was basically supposed to do is he was tasked with the idea of helping the brothers reach this point. Therefore, Yaakov gives him the special coat, says, you are the leader of the Jewish people for this Midah. Yosef feels that he's tasked with his mission of teaching the brothers of how we can conquer the world through not using everything for our own personal needs, but rather for L'shem Shamayim. And so he shares his dreams, which he believes is a vision of that. And then when it says they went l'rot et atzman, they went to Shechem to find their own ways in Avodas Hashem. They say to Yaakov, you're wrong. This is not the only way that you could serve God, but there are other ways. So they couldn't do that in their house where their father was saying, this is the only way to get to God. So they go to Shechem to find a different way for each of them to find their own way of serving God. Okay, that is an Asidah Shalom. The next answers of Moshe Tzvi Neria. Now, we have not done this in a very long time where we have a chart. I think the last time we did it maybe was the Makos. And when we did it, everybody had a pen and paper and we were sitting at a table together for a long time. So no one has to feel the need for this, but I felt that it was actually a clearer way of doing this. Let's take a look at five of the 12 brothers. We choose these five because we don't really know about anybody else. The only other brother that we have even an inkling of is Binyamin. And at this point, Binyamin is too young to have any story that revolves around him other than the fact that at birth, his mom died. So we have five brothers, and the second column is Erua. What happened to them? So Reuven, we have two stories by him, Bilhah and Mechiras Yosef. Shimon Levi, the story that we have that we're going to deal with, which we know clearly is them, is Shechem, Yehuda and Tamar, and Yosef and his dreams. So the question is, are these good? When we look at these stories, are they good stories or are they bad stories? And by that I mean, do they paint the person in a good light or a bad light? So Reuven by Bilhah, and let's actually ignore Mechiras Yosef for a minute. Reuven by the story of Bilhah.
Bad.
Yeah, it doesn't look too good. And even Mechiras Yosef, if you're looking at it from the perspective of someone that's watching it without being able to get into Reuven's head, it also looks pretty bad. He basically says, oh, we shouldn't actively kill our brother. Let's passively kill our brother. But it's really one and the same. I don't know, maybe you go from premeditated to manslaughter. I don't know. It doesn't sound much, you know, that much better. Shimon Levi and Shechem.
Both good and bad.
Yeah, depends on which part of the way. Story.
That they kill a whole city.
But why? That was okay. It was only taking into the spoils, and that was bad.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we want to watch last week's Chabura, we definitely did a good job of painting it well. But the fact that they kill a whole city, they don't speak to their father. Their father certainly doesn't feel good about it. Yehuda and Tamar. So yes,
also good bad.
Yeah, so it's true. I mean, he says in the end, "Sod kami
nani." On whose perspective are you looking at it from?
I don't know. It's funny because Yehuda and Tamar is one of those stories that that I have a hard time with. I mean, I think everybody has a hard time with it. But you know, again, my perspective on things as a fan of the wicked King Ahav is sometimes jaded a little bit. But I mean, he's like a really good guy, and he sleeps with a prostitute. And even the way he sleeps with the prostitute, I mean, it's pretty coarse. Like, she sees him on the side of the road, and he's like, all right, let's sleep together. How much is it going to cost? You know, it's not like, there's no romancing or anything. You know, I don't know. It doesn't really look too good. Okay, in the end, he proves himself by saying, Tzad kami meni. And Yosef in his dreams also, it's the same thing. He's like in their face with the dreams. So all of these come out looking negative. So if Moshe Tzvi Neria says, actually, we can find something good in all of them. What's good about Reuven by the story of Bilhah and Mechiras Yosef?
In Bilhah, he's trying to prop up Bilhah. And he's Leia. Fighting for her honor.
Right, for Leia. He's fighting for Leia's honor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Good. So he's fighting for Leia's honor, and he, and even with Yosef, right, he's taking responsibility. He's trying to protect Yosef. So Rav Neria says that what happens by Reuven, we see that he has this unbelievable ability to be responsible. Shimon and Levi by Shechem, they're moser nefesh for their sister. They're willing to die to save their sister. You know, even though they win in the end, they don't know that that's actually what's going to happen. Yehuda and Tamar, the fact is that he is willing to admit that he's wrong. Most people have the hardest time saying, I messed up, I'm wrong, it's on me. He's willing to do that. And Yosef, so what's Yosef? Okay, so we go through, we find a way to show that Reuven really is incredible. And Shimon and Levi are amazing. And Yehuda is outstanding. What about Yosef? What can we learn from Yosef? What is Yosef's ability that he proves from the story of the dreams?
I think it's growth. I mean, well, which dreams are you talking about? I mean, you're obviously talking about the...
I'm talking about the first dreams. I'm not going to the very end. Yes, there is a lot of growth in Yosef if you wait to see how the story ends. So Neri has a nice article that I started reading last night at Mariv about how he grows in Miketz and Vayigash and maybe even Vayechi. But at this point in time, we only have the first two dreams. Right, Yosef the dreamer telling them about how he's going to rule over them, or at least suggesting that. What's the greatness there? Any thoughts? So I'll share with you what Rav Neria. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you use the Nesiva Shalom, then he's trying to help his brothers grow spiritually.
Okay, good. So he's trying to help the brothers grow spiritually. So I'll take that one step further, which is I think what Rav Neria does. And he says that Yosef's strength is that he's able to tell Musar. He's able to give people Musar. Now, most people don't like giving Musar, getting Musar. And many people don't even like giving Musar. But even those people that like, that are okay giving Musar, it's much easier to give Musar to someone. I was having this conversation with someone this week. They asked me if I'm enjoying teaching 1 hour a week to yeshiva guys, right, like the gap year kids. So I said, yeah, thank God I really lucked out. I have the boys I learn with, they're really, like, they actually enjoy learning, so it makes my life a lot easier. So the person said to me, they're like, have you ever taught yeshiva guys? I said, no, it's actually the only age I really haven't taught. I've taught elementary school, a little bit of high school at some point also, and I've been teaching adults for all these years, but I never taught the in-between. So I said to him, but the truth is that teaching yeshiva guys is like a combination of teaching third grade and teaching adults. So it's like intellectually, they're, you know, they can think like adults, but but maturity wise, they're often like kids. So this person said to me that, you know, one of the nice things about teaching yeshiva guys, which I'm not 100% sure I agree with, is that yeshiva guys, they actually, when you want, they want to grow, as opposed to adults who have kind of settled into, this is who we are, and this is where we are. I don't know. I mean, we're all adults, myself included. I don't know. I think we're far from finished products, and we spend our whole life trying to get better. So, I don't know. I guess I have the schus of hanging out with people that all like to grow also. So I don't think that that's necessarily the case for adults, but okay. It's easier to give Musar to a Shana Aleph kid that's sitting there and saying, tell me everything that I could do to make my life better. But most people aren't like that. Okay, so Rav Neria says that what's the greatness of Yosef? The greatness of Yosef is that he is willing to give Musar to people even when it's very, very, very difficult. That's what he says. He then goes on to say that each of the brothers has their own strength. This is his language. Kina anachnu me'almim alumim. The Torah uses the word me'almim alumim. He says, what does that mean? Gibesh et ishuto rikezet et kochav. That each person was trying to take, the message of the dream is that each of us take our strengths, our personal traits, whatever they are, and that's what they were trying to do. Reuven contributes to Klal Yisrael, the fact that he's responsible. Shimon and Levi, they contribute the idea of Mesiras Nefesh. Yehuda, that you could admit that you're wrong. And Yosef, what is his major contribution? That it's not easy. Yet, what happens? He's willing to tell the brothers off. that is that's what his strength is. That's why the Torah is telling us a story. The story is not, it's not telling us that Yosef was unable to read the room. The opposite. Yosef was able to read the room. And yet, what does he say to them? He says to them, Anachnu ma'alumim alumim. I'm giving you Musr. Why? What's the Musr? Each of us have our own strengths. Let's figure out how we could take our strengths and make Klal Yisrael successful. I will end with two short vorts, which I think actually help us understand this a little bit better. In the next part of the story, which is not quoted here, Yaakov meets up with the guy from Dotan. What happens? The guy says to says to Yosef, Ma ata mevakesh, or Ma mevakesh, what are you looking for? And Yosef says, Et achai anochi mevakesh, I'm looking for my brothers. Okay, it's a beautiful quote. It's at the entrance to the roundabout that could take you to Shechem or away from Shechem. Et achai anochi mevakesh. Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg shares a very different idea. I don't remember who he quoted, but it's amazing. Anochi, what's anochi? He should have said, "Adachai ani mevakesh." I'm looking for my brothers. What's anochi? Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Definitely not pshat in the pasuk, but he says, "What is it? What is he saying?" He's saying, "Anochi, Anochi Hashem Elokecha." God, what does God want? He wants us to look after our brothers. Yeah, Yosef is saying, "Adachai anochi mevakesh." Hashem wants me to look after my brothers, so I'm willing to chase after my brothers. I'm willing to follow my brothers. I'm willing to give musar to my brothers. Why? Because I care about my brothers. That's what he says. The idea that Rav Neri is suggesting is each brother would be a leader and add to Klal Yisrael something. It's all about bringing their strengths to the forefront and figuring out how to make that happen. The Nesiva Shalom, I was a little bit tired yesterday, and as I was reading the Nesiva Shalom, I didn't realize that the page had flipped back when I wasn't by my computer, and I ended up reading the end of the piece before, not the end of the piece that I needed. But he quotes this amazing idea. The pasuk from Tehillim says, "Hinei matov manaim shevet achim yachtav." What is the best, says David HaMelech, when brothers are able to sit together? So he suggests the following: when each one's strength comes out, they are truly unbelievable. That's the idea of the Jewish people together, and that's what I think Rav Neri is saying, that we have to figure out what the strength is of every single brother, and you put them all together, and what happens? The Jewish people become unbelievably strong. How do they become unbelievable? How does that work? So he says, picture one candle in a room. One candle in a room lights up the room. The room is no longer dark. But if you put 12 candles in the room, it's not that you get 12 candles versus light, but all the candles exponentially light up the room. He says one candle gives a little bit light, but biyachad there is so much more. That's really what that's the message, and that's the idea of what Parshas Vayeshev is all about. It's the brothers figuring themselves out, including Yosef. All of them have to figure out what their strengths are. All of them have to figure out what their kochot are. And when they figure out what they are, then they're able to contribute them to make the Jewish people most successful. That is the journey that the Jewish people were on from the very beginning of Vayeshev. And I would suggest perhaps that journey doesn't end with Vayechi, with the death of the brothers. But that really is the Jewish journey throughout. It's everybody figuring out what is their contribution, what is it that they could add to Klal Yisrael. Have a wonderful Shabbos.